Okay, so I'm looking at a photo of the Voxmobile.
One of a kind. They only had one.
Yeah.
Yep.
How long did you have this car for, Paul?
I think it was like for a weekend. Yeah, it was. They were traveling around promoting.
Yeah, they bring it to town every once in a while.
Vox amplifiers, yeah.
So they would travel from store to store that sold Vox equipment.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And use this as a promo.
Right, right.
But it actually had functional keyboard
or
organ in the back. And
they could play a tape and play it through the big PA system audio, and it would, you know, play pre-recorded music on it, too. Yeah.
But were you able to actually drive this thing around?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You had to find it.
You had a big blower on the front. It had a supercharged motor on the thing.
So you could actually...
Like a Ford Cobra motor.
Yeah, you can see the driver's seat there with the...
So you actually drove this to the prison?
I didn't drive it. No, I wasn't allowed to drive it. No, it was hauled in a 18-wheeler.
Yeah.
You know, they'd drive it up into the...
So they would drive it to the prison...
Not they load it up on a 18-wheeler.
And then they would drop it off.
Yeah, and then back it out, you know.
At the prison.
Yeah, at the prison, mm-hmm. And had pictures taken and that, yeah.
Okay.
I suppose Mike Barrich has got to have pictures of that.
Is this a one-of-a-kind vehicle?
Yes.
Do you have any idea what happened to it?
None whatsoever. That'd be interesting.
It's probably still around.
I've tried to find it, but I haven't been able to locate it.
If you Googled it, it doesn't come up?
I don't know.
Of course, then Paul also had a complete suit made out of Vox grill cloth.
How did you have that done, Paul?
Very difficultly.
No, some lady. It was nice. It was bell-bottom pants with a vest.
Yep.
And but it was lined. You
could hardly move in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
It was all made out of the grill cloth.
Right.
Yep.
Except the inside was lined with silk, or you know, so it wouldn't scratch your skin.
And this was custom made for you by a tailor?
I think somebody had it. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it was custom made.
And did you wear it at the store?
No, but I wore it at the prison for Vox night or whatever it was. I think I only wore it once.
Do you still have it?
No.
What happened to it?
A good question. What happened to a lot of that stuff I had? Even my pictures, I know I had much more pictures than those.
In my mind here, I'm trying to figure out the store. The first floor, you had all the equipment on.
Yes.
And then upstairs was your office?
Well, no, the upstairs actually ended up, you had drums. We moved the drums upstairs.
Yep.
Up there, and then there was kind of like a little, or an office space for bookkeeping and all that kind of stuff. And then... a sitting area where we'd
and a space
play blow your mind games.
Listen to music, yeah.
And a space for lessons, too.
And then I talked to Dale Strength recently, and he also informed me that Pepper Art
had that was on the porch.
Office out there.
Okay.
Yeah, that was on the back porch.
On the same building.
Yeah, him and Vern Morris had a company that they called Pepper Art that did posters for bands, album covers, some pictures.
So, Paul, how long did the store last on Penn Avenue North?
Well, we're trying to decide that. I think we opened it in the fall of 67, and I suppose it was the spring of 70.
Paul, what brought Wagner Music on Penn Avenue North to a close?
Poor business practices.
Meaning what?
Well, being a small town boy, we just ran out of funds.
You were too generous to a lot of people.
That perhaps had something to do with it. Now we just ended up going out of business. That I ran out of funds, owed a lot of money, especially to more of the monies to the national outfit to... back in those days, they had what was called floor planning. You could bring in equipment, and then you could they'd give you a 3 months free floor planning, and after that, you had to pay a certain percentage and all that. Well, and I ran into trouble with that at that time that they helped us get into business, so I had them come up there and clear their stuff out of the store. you know, take it back and get credit on that stuff. So kind of the dark times in my life, and maybe a blessing, maybe because of what happened there, that I ended up that I'm still alive today, you know, and have been able to pursue other things. But for me, during that time, that short period, you know, when you think about it, it's really a short period of time compared to other stores that have been around much longer. But it's memories that I'll never forget. I had some really good times with that, with the interaction with the musicians that I just would look forward to, especially like we were talking that back in those days, they had a lot of teen dance centers. You had the Hullabaloo Club, you had the barn, you had the prison, you had Cigarskis, the Purple Cigar, Cigarskis, and Magoo's, Twin City Opera. And then you had the bars, like you had the Bradford's, you had more downstairs, the office. So that was kind of my life. Promoting, I always called it promoting, that close the store, I'd leave at 9 o'clock and go down to more downstairs to hear whoever, you know, because, and it kept a lot of bands employed. I really believe that. And then, but then they had the episode at someplace else, and that was the beginning of the end for teen dances. Teen dances were really cool. Yeah. There was no alcohol or anything like that. I'm sure the people were outside maybe smoking a joint or something and drinking, but not in the clubs and that. Just some great musicians. I'm sure they had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun listening to them. You know, a lot of them that, a lot of individual musicians that really impressed me. You know, one you brought up was Scott Frazier, that plays a heck of a classical guitar. I got to mention some, and I don't want to exclude anybody. If I had my favorites to pick, one of my favorite bass players was Donnie Larson with the Underbeats. Yeah. Of course, Craswell on the drums. Pete on the drums, you know. Yep. He was just such a showman. It was unbelievable. I remember
he used to buy all of his sticks from me. He used to buy 144 at a time, a box.
Yep. Yep. 50 cents a pair. Yep. Get these old cheap things. Because Pete was going to break them, you know.
Well, the store was really a magnet for you know, musicians that were touring and traveling. As a matter of fact, when the first time I ever met Billy Franzi, you know, who was still, you know, really a powerhouse to contend with, multi-musician, recording, touring musician. The first time I met him was probably within the first week or so that his band came up here from Chicago, a band called Triad.
That was from Indiana.
Cleveland. Yeah, I'm sorry, you're correct. And they had a keyboard player that was Mo. The guy's name was Mo, and he kicked bass pedals. Then Billy could play guitar and bass, and he came in the store one day, and he was very modest, very humble, very unpretentious, and I approached him and asked him if there's anything I could do to help him, you know, kind of a salesman type role. And, you know, there was a flute in the case, you know, because you had some of the band, had a few band instruments there. And he wanted to look at the flute, and he was kind of fumbling with it and trying to figure out, I think, how to put it together, which I thought was a little odd. And then it wasn't very long afterwards that he was actually playing scales on it. It's the first time that he'd picked up a flute and actually, but this is the kind of a talent that he was. And you know, the best of the best were drawn to Big Daddy Wags because it had a reputation.
Are you talking about Billy or someone else in the band?
Billy Franzi.
Billy was playing the flute.
Yeah, I mean, and he had, to the best of my knowledge, you know, it's a long time ago, but he had never actually attempted to play a flute, but he had that kind of natural gift, that kind of talent. That's the, you know, Big Daddy Wags was the place to come and hang, even if you came from out of town.
That's where a lot of the musicians grew up.
Where was I? I must have been out doing something, huh?
Did the store also continue to sell records?
Not much, no. I think we finally...
For a while.
When we found out that every time, if someone came in and ripped off an album from us, we'd have to pay for it. Oh. But I found out, like, Target, if you ripped it off from Target, they didn't have to pay for it because they only paid for the records they sold. And so, and we couldn't compete, you know, the price on it. We did sell some 8-tracks, so we had a Learjet 8-track that one of my employees got canned over because dad came back with his son and said, I want his money back for this 8-track. And I said, do you have the receipt? I said, more than happy to give you the receipt. What receipt? It said, where's the receipt? So I didn't get one. I said, well, who sold it to you? And they named the guy, and that's when I found out that a little under the cuff.
Was it sold?
but we sold a lot of those Learjet. But that was the same thing with those electronics, you know. They use them for about 6 months and they'd go bad and we'd have to, I don't know if we had to, but we would replace them, you know.
Learjet was the
brand name
of the player.
Yeah. Right.
The exact player.
Right, exactly. Under the dash.
Under the dash. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Got it.
Okay. That was the 8-track days. Yeah.
Okay, so looking back, any final thoughts about your time at Wagner Music, Ozzy?
Well, I got a lot of experience just meeting music because I was playing, obviously, but not in the caliber of anybody that came through. It was a good, great stepping stone from me to get some exposure to the music business there and then move on to the other stuff I did. Any musician that came in and wanted help, Paul was always, he'd do anything to help anybody.
Didn't you tell me that you and Paul went on to do something after the store closed where Paul was doing sales and some upholstery thing?
After the store had closed, Paul was doing some sales for the fella that was doing reupholstery. He got me a job with the guy, so I was picking up furniture and delivering it to the same guy, and so we worked together a little bit.
Since then, later on, I ended up working for Ozzy.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, Ozzy, he's a home builder. So, of course, me being thinking that there isn't anything I can't do is that he hired me to do trim job on one of his homes.
Oh, well, in fact, yes.
Yeah, and I did everything except the stairwell. I think I ended up paying the guy more than I got or whatever. But actually, Ozzy's firm built my daughter's and son-in-law's home out. And, and did a nice job on it, and we fixed it up, and they ended up selling, and they moved up north now. So, so Ozzy and I drove back someplace.
Okay.
Denny was known for chopping organs.
Chopping Hammonds, organs.
Chopping Hammond organs.
Hammond organs. He'd take them, you know, so they could haul them, and I'd cut the bottoms off of it. And if I'm not mistaken, I think, did you do one of those at the store?
We did do one at the store until we found out that the vapors from the fiberglass resin were making all the employees sick, and I had to move it home, which then only just made my family sick. But but you know, there was a whole transition there where I transitioned out of working for your store and went to work for Freedom Electronics, and you kept your finger in it, in the music aspect, because you had a house in Robbinsdale that you lived in down over the hill from where I grew up.
Yeah.
And you had a big shop. It was Golden Valley. You had a big shop in your garage, and you kept making these big kind of industry standard bass bins that you wholesaled to Freedom Electronics, and then Freedom Electronics resold us as part of their big catalog that I just had out here earlier. So you kept your finger in the music thing, and that was great because it set a trend. You know, people could get bigger sound systems and bigger PAs for less money.
Quite a deal.
Danny, final thoughts about your time at Wagner Music?
Well, and again, you know, Paul and his brother, Charlie, were really the real deal. I mean, they were really genuine people that had a heart for music and the people that were involved in music. And they were tremendous supporters, both morally and emotionally and financially. It helped a lot of musicians get where they got eventually. And I've always been grateful for that. Had lots of fond memories, both of Paul as a store operator, but then his older brother Charlie, who actually taught me piano. I took lessons from Charlie for a while, and he was an extraordinarily talented pianist, both as a performing pianist and as a teacher, and kind of for a long time almost kind of a second dad to a lot of people. As I think Paul's a little younger than his brother, but Paul was probably the second brother that nobody ever had, and then Charlie was the second dad that people needed. But I have wonderful, fond memories. I'm really glad that I had a chance to see Paul now again and do this. Thanks.
Okay, Howie, final thoughts.
Most of my friends are from those days that we've all kept doing what we were doing back then, just having a good time and just being a big family of musicians and music-related things, and then Me and Denny worked together when I had a wholesale company for aftermarket products for computers. We also played in a couple different bands together after that. But that's where all my friends came from, you know.
Okay, the last word goes to Paul. Paul, what are you up to these days?
Of course, I'm retired and getting tired. Learning that what my dad told me when I was young, and he said, just wait till you get old, that your mind tells you that you're in your teens, but yet you're an older person. Just enjoying life. My wife, Jean, we're going to be married 55 years coming the next July, if we both make it. We're good health. Have lots of grandchildren, starting to have great-grandchildren, and really been blessed. Like I said, I wish, you can wish in one hand and all that kind of stuff, that it could have lasted a little longer, but it's what it is, and I'm really grateful to be here today, especially with these three gentlemen that were part of the store. And I keep thinking that, yeah, they were employees, but I don't know if they ever got paid. They claimed they got paid, but if they did, it was very little on that. So nice reminiscing, thanks to Denny for this wonderful facility. So, and I think I'm going to try and make more of an effort to, when there's some of these get-togethers, I understand there's some birthday bashes that I see in Steve Miller has a birthday
coming up in November.
Okay, November, the great guitarist for Gypsy and Johnson.
Yep,
Jimmy Johnson.
Jimmy Johnson has. He have a birthday?
Just had a birthday just had a month ago.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
One coming up this Wednesday at the Poorhouse with a lot of the Dale Strengths and the Zippy Kaplans. Yeah, big time.
Well. When? This week?
This weekend. This week on Wednesday.
Unfortunately, I'll be in Florida.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. We got a week down there to check on some stuff. But it's been a real trip coming back and reflecting back of those days. That, like I said in the beginning, I thoroughly enjoyed what I was doing in most respects. There was something I had to do over, I had the chance to do over, I'm sure it would have done a little different, that maybe we'd be always sitting here saying, well, geez, it's been 40-some, 50-some years for Wagner Music. I'm extremely proud of my nephew, Peter, carrying on the tradition of music store down in Lavon's, and like you said, he's got a good reputation, and his daughter will continue it on. So thanks for having me here. Maybe we can do it again sometime, another 5-10 years.
Paul, Howie, Denny, Ozzy, thank you for taking the time to stop by Sunrise Sound today here in Rogers and share with us the story of your time at Wagner Music.
Thank you.
The preceding interview was recorded on October 18th, 2015 at Sunrise Sound in Rogers, Minnesota, and was produced by Denny Johnson and Tom Campbell. The copyright owner of this interview is MiniPaulMusic.com.